Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Gilcrease Museum recently announced the timeline for the demolition and reconstruction of the facility. They recently announced a closing date, originally intended to be a renovation after architects and design specialists looked over the facility, which has been augmented over the years by a series of expansions. The experts said it would be more cost-effective and protective of the art and fine objects to rebuild entirely. As a result, Gilcrease Museum will close at the end of the day on July 4th this summer and will reopen with a new facility by the end of 2024. Renderings of the new building will be unveiled in late June, but today we find out what's exactly involved in this project. From moving over 200,000 pieces of art, sculpture, and anthropological objects to a secure location, to how the museum will stay in the public eye over the next 3 years, and what happens to the collection while the museum is closed. We'll find out all about that today. I'm joined by Gilcrease's Executive Director, Susan Neal, who joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Susan Neal, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
These next couple of months, as you wrote to museum members, will be bittersweet as the museum prepares to close, but it will also be preparing for a brand new future with a new facility. As a museum prepares to close for an extended period of time, what are the main points of emphasis for museum visitors for the next few months?
That's something that we have given a lot of thought to. We wanted to go ahead and get the announcement out that we were going to temporarily close at close of business on July 4th because we wanted people, not only locally but regionally and nationally, to have the opportunity to come see the collection and to come to Gilcrease as many times as they can between now and July 5th. So the opportunities that we have right now, we started just a few weeks ago with a series called Music on the Porch. As soon as we reopened from our COVID closure, we started having evening hours. So we're open every Thursday night until 8 p.m. And we know that having additional programming makes it even more attractive for people to come. So we wanted to also support local musicians. So we've created Music on the Porch series. We have a slate of wonderful performances coming up every Thursday night on the porch at the Thomas Gilcrease House in the Victorian Garden. And we just invite everyone to bring their lawn chairs, come enjoy the music for a bit, come to the museum. We have some food truck fare. It's just a really nice environment. People have thanked us for having it because it's so nice to get out again and still be socially and safely distanced in a wonderful environment and then to go to the museum. So we made that opportunity possible. We will be having some special events, both for our members and for the public between now and July 5th. But our closing exhibit is one that I'm very excited for. It's co-curated by Mark Dolph, who is the curator of history here at Gilcrease, and our own local Tulsa historian and author, Hannibal Johnson. And the exhibit is From Enslavement to Emancipation, Toward a More Perfect Union. And it is an exhibit that contains three of the very valuable documents that are in the Gilcrease collection. One is a letter from Diego Columbus, Christopher Columbus's son. It was written in 1520 to the King of Spain. And in that letter, he invites the idea of bringing Africans to the Caribbean for the purpose of slavery, to fill a labor void. So we call it certainly the letter of original sin.
Indeed.
And one that we still grapple with trying to recover from to this very day. The other two documents are a signed copy by Abraham Lincoln of the Emancipation Proclamation and our signed copy of the Declaration of Independence. And the title of the exhibit certainly represents the aspirational goals and the language of those two documents. But as I just noted, the title is Toward a More Perfect Union. And again, what we're living through today certainly exemplifies that we aren't there yet. And the words with liberty and justice for all, many of the other concepts in those documents are still aspirational for many of us in this country. So I think that we are really looking forward to that exhibit. It will open on June 17th, so it will be open for Juneteenth. And then it will close with the museum on July 4th.
Yeah. That sounds like it brings in the history of Gilcrease Museum, which is such a strong component of the collection, the documents as well as artwork that is an ethnographic material that's a part of the collection. Also, this is a probably a time for people to say farewell to some of the beautiful artwork that is part of the collection. Have you made a special emphasis to make sure that all the major pieces in the collection are available for viewing in the last months of the museum until it closes?
We have, yes, we have an exhibit that has been up for some time, Masterworks, which does include some of the most beautiful Moran, the most beautiful Bierstadts. The opportunity to see those and some of the other great artists that are in this collection in another exhibit called Americans All. So yes, a lot of people's favorites, the Russells, the Remingtons, are in those two exhibitions. And then we have another exhibit, Enduring in Bronze, that has a number of the sculptures included. So I think people will be happy to reacquaint themselves with their favorites in the collection. And you mentioned bittersweet. This is a bittersweet time. I think people think I must not be attached to this building, or that I, because I am excited about the future and the prospect of a new Gilcrease. But it is hard for me personally to say goodbye to this building. I have many memories here. I was married here in the Vista Room. And if I say that I was married here 40 years ago, this upcoming August, I can't believe that, but it's true. And so I have a very strong emotional attachment, family memories, personal memories that I know others have. So beyond just their connection to the collection, I really do hope people will find their way to the museum in the coming weeks and the coming months.
Well, can you walk us through what is the current timeline for the facility's closure and reconstruction and reopening?
Sure. The closure, as I mentioned, is close of business on July 4th. I want to make sure that people know that we are actually open through July 4th. So sometimes you'll hear us say closing July 5th. That's the closing time. We will be, at that time, about 50% of the way through design development phase for the museum. We will have been able to share renderings the mayor will hold a press conference sometime, I believe, at the end of June. That's when we're shooting for, anyway, to share a rendering or two of the new museum. And then some of the plans for the grounds, a master plan that has a longer-term vision. And then, like I said, close on July 5th. We will take on the off-site location. We will get the keys to the off-site location here soon and begin moving the collection actually before we close. And we've already packed about a third of it. So that's another story. We can certainly touch on that in a minute. But so if we start moving at the end of June, share renderings at the end of June, close on July 5th, really finish moving the rest of the collection through October, and then begin closing the grounds, I believe, in November, because this will become a demolition site, and then hopefully have a groundbreaking after the first of the year, in January in 2022.
And then you're looking at 2 to 3 years of construction?
Correct. And the mayor has identified a period of time that he would like us to have this project completed by, and that is the end of 2024. So that's what we're aiming for.
And that sounds like there's an awful lot to do. What is actually involved in closing a museum like this? Because, you know, I can't think of many total reconstructions like this. Many museums will, you know, they'll add a wing or they'll do a complete renovation of their facility, but they still have the facility even during a reconstruction. I can't think of a model for a museum to emulate in this particular fashion.
Well, when you ask what's involved, a lot. and I can tell you that, thankfully, there are professionals in this business that are actually, that's what they do, is move art. And they do it for museums all over the world. And there are a number of museums that have done exactly what we've done. So, yes, there is a model for this. It is not as common as just building a new wing or an expansion. But other buildings have the same issues after a period of time as this building has, and other museums have had to make the same decision that has to be made on for fiscal responsibility reasons. And so when we get to the specifics, what we have been doing, and I think I mentioned that at least a third of our collection is already packed, but knowing this was coming and still not knowing exactly, because it's a process even just to get to identifying where you're going to relocate it, finding a building that can really accommodate all your needs and be adjusted to meet museum standards, et cetera, is a challenge. So it's even more of a challenge during COVID. We went ahead and started measuring. Our prep team started measuring every piece of art, every piece of sculpture, because they know that it has to be created to a certain standard, and the crates have to be built to those standards. They have to be packed a certain way. And knowing all of that was coming, they've already begun this process. Once you know where you're going to move it, you need to have the expertise of a great partner in a professional art moving company. And we are fortunate to have Crozier Fine Art with us. And they have moved more art than any other art moving company in the world. So we feel like they are very experienced. And we've done all this during a pandemic. Absent a pandemic, this would be a challenge. During a pandemic, it is an extra challenge. When you are trying to take bids from an art mover to learn how much they would want to charge to move your collection, all of that normally is done when they can visit the collection and make that assessment. They couldn't do this, so we've had to video our collection and give video tours and kind of go an extra mile in every aspect of this to make this work during a pandemic. Fortunately, travel has opened up, and the company that we're partnering with has been able to arrive in the last week or so, and we're beginning in earnest to work with them. But in addition to the crating and the packing and all of that, you also have to have a barcode for every item, every box, every crate, because you're going to scan that as it leaves the museum, and someone's going to be on the other end to receive it and rescan it so that nothing is lost in the transition.
Yeah, and it will also be scanned when it comes back.
and you'll go through the same thing when it comes back. So when you ask what's involved, I don't know that I knew exactly what was involved when we started down this road, but I certainly know a lot more now, and it is a lot. There are a lot of spinning plates. It's not like, I wouldn't say it's landing at Normandy by any means, but it's nonetheless a very strategic and complex approach that is required.
Well, to me, it's somewhat daunting because, you know, you have such varied materials. You have a large, extensive library. You have a library in the sense of antiquarian documents. You have huge ethnographic collections with, you know, huge number of pieces within the ethnographic items. Some of them are, you know, precious metals. Some of them are very fragile, material made from organic material. It seems to me very daunting in just the transportation and move. Many of them are very small and in large quantity. I guess this is the process of making sure that everything's inventory packed correctly so it survives in the interim and is back in the museum when it's ready to open.
Absolutely. We take this responsibility. We don't own this collection. The citizens of Tulsa own the collection. And this asset, it is daunting. It is a huge responsibility. I am grateful for an experienced team, and I am internally. Our registrar comes to us with, I believe, three other museum moves to her credit. So she knows how to do this and how to organize this. And then the partner that we have with Crozier, I feel like we're in very good hands, but that doesn't mean I still sleep well at night. It is a big project. And thankfully, our works on paper and our document archive, we have housed here at the Helmreich Center for American Research on the Gilcrease campus. So we aren't having to move our library, which is of huge relief. And while you might hear the number that we are, you know, using in when we're having these conversations, that we're moving a little over 200,000 objects because our document archive does not have to be moved. So that's a relief. but all the other types of objects that you mentioned, yes. And they all have to be handled very carefully. And we have we're only working with people who are used to handling precious art objects and who are experienced with moving them and inventorying them. And we're also hoping not only do these come back just as in the same condition, but some of them are going to come back in better condition because while we are closed, this gives us an opportunity to spend additional time on conservation of this very massive collection. And I tell my conservator and the woman who is in charge of digitizing it all that they have great job security because this work would never be done in one lifetime.
Yeah, and I guess that will be a way you keep the museum in the public eye is by digitizing collections. And I hadn't thought about this is an ideal time to conserve paintings and art objects that are always wanting to be seen in the public view. And when it's always wanting to be seen, you can't take time to conserve it.
That's true. If you're handling the collection appropriately and responsibly, you do give those items a rest and make sure that even if you don't have the wherewithal for their constant conservation, that you must let them rest after a while. But how we're going to stay in touch with the public, you raised that through our online collection. I will to say that it has been an amazing year for everyone and not a year that we would want to repeat, I know, this past year. But one thing that did occur for us was it was a great dress rehearsal for how to stay in touch with the public when you are closed. Hmm. Because so many museums had to close for a number of months. And although we reopened in July, what every museum across the country and I suppose around the world learned from this is having your collection online and being able to use technology and many digital platforms to stay in touch with your audiences and to grow audiences is critical. And I know this, that even after we have reopened, how we are communicating and staying in touch with audiences digitally is still as important as it was when we were closed. And I think that will always be important to museums and their future going forward. The technology, what we learned from COVID was that once you build that, you don't want to let it go. And a perfect example of why for us is we've had Facebook Live programs where we have 600 people attending to learn about a panel and their personal experiences as they went to school in Indian boarding schools. I think we had nearly 700 people attend that Facebook Live. That was not only people locally, but people from all over the country. So we've even broadened our audiences through our digital collection. And I think we had over 79,000 people visit our online collections last year. And we also can tell by a heat map that we've had visitation to our online collection from someone in every country in the world but 5 countries.
Wow.
It's another way of putting your collection and Tulsa on the map.
My guest today is Susan Neal, the executive director of a Gilcrease Museum. A Gilcrease Museum will close for demolition and reconstruction at the close of business on July 4th and will reopen by the end of 2024, hopefully earlier, but certainly by the end of 2024. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. While details and renderings are expected in late June or early July, in general, what are the key components that the new Gilcrease Museum will house? Are there certain sort of key components that, certainly in the lead up to the vision vote, it was greater exhibition space. There were a few things that were laid out to voters. What are the key components that the new museum will feature?
Sure. two of those components that were, I know, voters and the mayor, because he and I were involved with this process through the vision process, were wanting to make sure that were delivered in the new Gilcrease, is additional space for galleries. An additional way of showing new ways of showing the collection and being able to show more of the collection. So that will be in the new Gilcrease. And the idea of being able to attract and house a large traveling exhibition so that someone's not having to fly to Dallas or Chicago to see that, but that we can do it here in Tulsa. And making that opportunity available in New Gilcrease. And that is coming in the new building. So I think that those were the primary aspects that I know were critical to our conversation in the vision process. And I think, too, that we have a disjointed building currently, and how the collection can be cared for and housed in this building, it is a real challenge. So having a full basement that is going to be dedicated to collection care and the housing of this most valuable asset is also going to be a wonderful opportunity in the new Gilcrease.
Well, you know, certainly during the lead up to the decision to include the Gilcrease renovation and expansion in the latest round of vision funding, there were renderings put out for an expanded Gilcrease. But of course, what has been determined is the age and disjointed nature of the expansions over the years has meant it's far more cost effective and better for the collection because of heating and air conditioning issues to build a new facility. Are those renderings sort of that was then, what will come out in June will be now?
Correct. You know, when you're talking about an expansion on a building or a facility, that's a totally different animal. When we learned that this building was not sound, that it would not have been fiscally responsible to put public money into this building for the long term and the next generation of Tulsans to enjoy Gilcrease Museum, it changed dramatically the concept for construction. We had, when we were working on the vision process, we had about 3 weeks to show that you were serious, you needed to have a concept. And we were anticipating that it would be an expansion. So we did invest in some drawings, but that's what it was. It was drawings and it was a concept. But once a concept gets out there, I think people have that in their mind. Well, that's what it's going to look like. I think even had we done just an expansion, it would not have looked like those initial concept drawings. So once you hire an architect to really take the project forward, it really does evolve, and this certainly has, but particularly because it's brand new construction.
Now, the museum, you've taken the time to come up with a new interpretive plan before you actually have building plans, which I think was an interesting idea that you're going to put the museum's collections into context for the present. How will that guide the planning of the new facility?
When you have a collection of this magnitude and this importance, not just to the local community, but to the national narrative and to, because of what it contains, the documents, the art, the anthropological artifacts that you've alluded to, you should put the collection first in how it's really going to serve people, and then put that collection to work for the people who own it. So keeping that in mind, we started with the collection rather than the building. We wanted the visitor experience to be worthy of this collection. We wanted the narrative to be worthy of this collection. So we engaged a museum firm, Gallagher & Associates, and we've worked with them for the last 2 years. And really, they have art historians, art designers, exhibition designers. And working with our staff, we are reshaping that narrative. And I want to be very clear, we are not rewriting history in the new representation of Gilcrease Museum, but we will be telling more people's history and with an eye toward making sure that we are sharing it through multiple lenses and not just the single lens of one group or privileging one group over another. Thomas Gilchrist wanted this to be the Museum of the Americas. His collection spans really from Panama to Alaska, so it's North America broadly defined. He wanted multiple stories to be told. It so happens that we have a great, the best Western art collection as part of this collection, but there are 12,000 years of history here. And I think in the new museum, we hope that it is a broader representation of this extraordinary collection.
Now, earlier we talked about how the museum will stay in the public eye during the 2 to 3 year closure. One way a lot of facilities do that is they tour their collections when their facility is closed for renovation. Will that be the case for Gilchrist?
It will. If we can get through the next few weeks, we have, and I'm sure we will, we have been working with a national company on, as I said, for about 3 years, knowing that this day would come eventually, to prepare a Gilchrist exhibit that could travel nationally during our closure. And one of the things, we've not let COVID stop us, but it does slow you down at some level. We were thinking, will museums be open? When will museums be open? And when will museums be interested again? And when will museums have the funding again to pay for a traveling exhibition from Gilchrist? But we have stuck with it, and it does look like it's going to come together, and hopefully we will be able to announce shortly the venues and when this traveling exhibit will take place and where it will be going. We're assuming it'll be 4 or 5 venues across America.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, there's still a few months left to see some old favorites as well as discover some new works at Gilchrist Museum, which will be open through July 4th. Susan, thanks very much for sharing what's happening with Gilchrist Museum today.
Rich, thanks for the opportunity. I look forward to seeing everyone at Gilchrist soon.
Susan Neal is the executive director of Gilchrist Museum of Art. Gilchrist recently announced their timeline for the closing, demolition, and reconstruction of the facility. They'll close at the end of the day, July 4th, and then reopen with a new facility by the end of 2024. To learn more about the project or current exhibits now on display at Gilchrist Museum, visit gilchrist.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.